Hello and welcome to the Conversations Politics podcast. I'm Michelle Grattan. The ALP faces a challenging winter break now that Parliament is in recess, after a session that saw Labor on the back foot in recent weeks. Bill Shorten will be in the witness box at the Royal Commission into Union Corruption. And there is the party's national conference, which will consider some contentious issues. Mark Butler, who's a frontbencher, has just been elected the new national president of the ALP, taking over at the national conference in July. He's also Labor's spokesman on environment and climate issues, and he joins us today. Mark Butler, let's start with climate. How successful do you think that the United Nations Conference on Climate Change that gathers in Paris later this year will be? We all remember the failed hopes of Copenhagen. Do you think it'll be better this time?
Well, everyone has very different benchmarks against which they assess these conferences, so it depends on where you come from. But I think generally people have a pretty high level of confidence that the Paris conference has a high likelihood of reaching a pretty ambitious global agreement. And I think the key reason for that is that the United States and China, who are so far and away the most significant powers in the world now, and also the by far and away the biggest polluters in the world, both leaderships in those countries have made it very clear that they not only want an ambitious agreement in Paris, but they are going to do a lot of work to achieve that. And I think that's a very different position to the one in which we're confronted in Copenhagen.
At present, there's bipartisan agreement on the pre-2020 Australian target. It's a pretty modest target. The government will soon announce the target for post-2020. We're getting some mixed signals and as to whether that'll be very modest again or a bit more ambitious. But do you think that there will be bipartisanship on that?
Well, I think the debate over the last 12 or 18 months over the renewable energy target reminds us all that we're only going to be able to make a significant transition in our economy that responds to the challenges of climate change if there is a bipartisan foundation to work on. And that's what you see in pretty much every other country in the world that's taken serious climate action. So I want bipartisanship. But there's no doubt that there is a pretty significant difference gap between the Labor Party's view about climate change and particularly Tony Abbott's view. So quite what they come up with as their proposed contributions, as they're described, for the Paris conference, which we expect in the next 3 or 4 weeks, remains to be seen, because I think there will be difficult debates within the Liberal Party. And there already is some indication through the media, speculation that there will be some work done to try and adjust the baseline instead of using 2000 as the baseline, using 2005 as the baseline, might be a way in which Tony Abbott can make relatively modest targets look more ambitious.
Could Labor afford, however, to have a more ambitious target than the government?
Well, at the end of the day, we'll make decisions in climate policy based on merit, based on our judgment of the best possible policy. The really important bipartisan position, which we understand is still a bipartisan position, is the commitment that all countries signed on to in 2010, which was to do for every country to do its fair share to ensure that global warming did not exceed or go beyond 2 degrees warmer than pre-industrial level. So there are some benchmarks that really we should all be using to assess emissions reduction targets, whether we are in the United States or whether we're China or whether we are Australia. So we'll make our decisions in this policy area according to our judgment of the best policy in the national interest framed by that international commitment.
The Pope recently issued a very strong statement on climate, said that action was urgent and people should regard this as a prime area. What influence do you think that will have internationally and nationally?
Well, I think it's another very important voice added to a debate that's developing and moving quite fast. And I think there have been a lot of very significant international voices that have been adding their call, really, for the world to do whatever it can to reach an ambitious agreement in Paris. President Obama, as I said earlier, the Chinese leadership, a number of European leaders, business leaders, including some leaders from the fossil fuel sector, particularly the gas sector. So it really is becoming quite a significant coalition of voices. Obviously, the Pope's is a very weighty voice indeed. And I think the call from the Pope, I think, reinforces the truth that this policy area has a whole range of dimensions: social policy dimensions, economic dimensions, dimensions around the gap or ambitions to improve equality between developed and developing nations, and obviously very significant environmental dimensions.
Do you think it's becoming an easier issue to prosecute in recent times? During the GFC, for example, I think people very much pushed it onto the back burner in their minds, the public, I mean.
I think in Australia there was something of a perfect storm in the last part of the decade, the previous decade. The GFC really did raise the importance of hip pocket issues for Australian voters. That was quite clear through the research before the GFC and after. But also the millennium drought came to an end. So a lot of the immediate sense people had about the actual impact of climate change started to recede a bit for Australians, particularly in the southeastern part of the country. And we had a very strong push internationally against climate policy, a push funded by the Koch brothers, who funded a lot of the anti-tobacco regulation campaigns, trying to leverage off the climate gate or email gate scandals, the so-called scandals around emails in this area. There really was a bit of a perfect storm that saw a very strong push against climate action. And I think that played out here in Australia. It obviously played out very strongly around the internal dynamics within the Liberal Party at the time.
Labor's committed to taking some form of emissions trading to the election. How far has work progressed on developing this policy at the moment?
Well, we're still in the process of developing a range of our key central policies, and this is obviously a very big one, in part because the legacy of the last government, the climate policy of the last government, has largely, well, pretty much been entirely dismantled. So to a significant degree, we are dealing with something of a blank slate here. You're right, Bill Shorten has committed to Labor taking an emissions trading scheme to the next election. That should be of no surprise to anyone. It has been Labor policy for at least a couple of decades, from back before the time when the Australian Greens even existed as a national political party. It's also, we're confident, the right policy. We've seen emissions trading, the idea of a legal cap that then lets business work out the most effective way to operate, continue to emerge around the world as the government's preferred response. We've seen an emissions trading scheme start this year in South Korea, our third largest export partner, and also 7 or 8 pilot schemes covering about 250 million people in China as well, with their ambition to move over the next couple of years to a national emissions trading scheme.
Bill Shorten the other day made the rather startling statement that there was a possibility we might have an election called during the winter break, that Parliament mightn't resume. I think most people don't think that's going to happen, but if it did, would you be ready to roll out your ETS quite quickly?
Well, we'd be ready to roll out our policy. We'd be ready to roll out our election policy around climate change, around renewable energy, and around all of the other things that people will be looking to as they decide how to vote at that election, whenever the election is called. Obviously, that's a matter for Tony Abbott, and we could all spend a lot of time speculating about when he might call it, but I think everyone should be very confident that whenever that is, sooner or later, Labor will be ready to fight that election.
Do you think that you can counter what would be an immense scare campaign by the government around an ETS?
Yes, I'm very confident that we can. I think Tony Abbott promised all Australians that his climate policy would make them $550 richer every year, and I think every Australian knows that simply has not been the case. It was a terrible scare campaign that he ran, I think, you know, commentators will make that judgment, but I think the general view is that he was a very effective opposition leader, particularly basing opposition on a series of scare campaigns, and this was quite central to his platform, I guess. We are very confident that, first of all, people will have seen through his promises to make them $550 richer every year. No one I talk to thinks that they are any richer because of Tony Abbott dismantling their our climate change policy.
You presumably have some stats to back up that.
Absolutely we do, whether it's about electricity bills or about the $100 lamb roasts that Barnaby Joyce warned us all about. All of the costs that Tony Abbott warned would go up and up and up. The overwhelming bulk of them didn't shift at all. There was some modest impact on electricity and gas prices, which was more than covered by the household assistance package for low and middle income earners and for pensioners. But look, we will need to meet that campaign. I'm very confident we can, based on the reality of what has happened since Tony Abbott took control of government. And also, I think the reality of his climate policy, which is wasting hundreds of millions of dollars already with an effective carbon price of $14, money handed over by taxpayers to big polluters, while we see pollution starting to rise in the electricity sector because of Tony Abbott's attack on renewable energy. A very ineffective policy that wastes hundreds of millions of taxpayers' dollars.
Let's turn to the national conference that's coming up in a few weeks. A couple of the big issues there will be Labor's position on turning back boats and also whether MPs should be bound on gay marriage. Can Labor possibly go into an election saying that it would not turn back boats?
Well, look, our draft platform is about to be published as we're doing this interview, Michelle, and there's been a lot of work gone into the asylum seekers part or the refugees part of the chapter, as there has been, frankly, for the last 15 years at every national conference I've been at. This is always one of the more controversial parts of our platform. I know Richard Miles, particularly as the shadow minister in the area, has been engaging a whole range of groups within the party and more broadly in the community about what our platform should be for the next election. So, you know, I don't want to go into the fine details of all that. I will say though, having looked at the draft platform, that there are significant measures, I think, that Richard, in consultation with a range of other people, has been able to put into the platform that I think will build on the work that we did during our last time in government, based on the expert panel that that Angus Houston headed up. Things like an increase in our refugee intake, better oversight of offshore processing centres, maximum times for the processing of asylum seeker claims, and things like that. Now, as to whether or not there will be a debate about some of the more fundamental elements of the regional processing framework and some other things that the Tony Abbott's government has put in place, I really, you know, that really is a matter of speculation. There's not a formal proposal, as I'm aware, yet before the conference. But I do know, I've been going to these conferences for 20 years now, I do know that this is usually an area where there is some debate, if not on the floor of the conference, then at least within the caucuses. And it may well be that that's the case again this year.
But your fundamental challenge really is to have a policy that doesn't allow the people smuggler trade to flourish again as it did under Labor previously. Now, if anything falls short of that, it's surely pretty disastrous for an election campaign.
Well, I think we're all conscious of that, and I think we've all reflected on what happened over the course of that 6 years, and Bill Shorten and Richard Miles and many others of us have reflected, I guess, on what happened, and our own assessment at the beginning of our government about the mix between push and pull factors and what happened over subsequent years. I think, though, objective commentators in this recognise that the regional processing arrangements that were put in place rather late in our time in government, particularly by Kevin Rudd, were very significant factors in the very big reductions that happened in the second half of 2013 in boat numbers, particularly the regional processing agreements that were struck with Papua New Guinea for Manus Island and Nauru.
But of course you had to strike very harsh agreements to fix up a problem that you'd created before.
Well, I think I think a very significant contribution to that public policy debate and the political debate was the work of the expert panel that Angus Houston headed up and included Paris Aristotle, a very significant figure in the refugee movement. And I think that changed, I think, the framework of thinking in this area, particularly with a view to regional processing being a way in which to stop the boat traffic between Java and Christmas Island, but also looking at things like the Australian refugee intake increasing after a very long period at 13,750 refugees per year up to 20,000 as we put in place just before we left government.
Now, on the conscience vote on gay marriage, what's your own view on this and where do you think the conference will land?
My personal view has been public for some time. Before the last conference, which was where we had this debate, I published op-eds and spoke publicly about my view on this, which is that the question of marriage equality is not a question of conscience, as we've defined that in the Labor Party and at a national level. Marriage nowadays is essentially a civic institution in Australia. About three quarters of marriages are conducted as civil ceremonies now in Australia, up from about 40% only 20 years ago. And in that view, I think we should apply the civic standard of equal treatment based on sexual preference. I have always had the view, though, that that should be subject to a legal right for churches and other religious organisations to choose not to conduct same-sex ceremonies if that is their wish. So that's been my view. It's the view I put at the 2011 National Conference. But as you know, Michelle, I was in the minority then.
So you'd vote for a binding vote?
Well, I don't get a vote. I'm the president at this National Conference. I will be in the chair.
Binding vote.
I think people who've been watching this debate, though, know that that is my view, and my view, as a matter of principle, hasn't changed. But I also recognise the reality that we had this debate at the 2011 conference, and there is a very significant debate underway in the Parliament now because of the private members bill that Bill Shorten and Tanya Plibersek have moved. And at the moment, until something changes, that debate is being conducted in the context of the 2011 policy, the Labor policy, that is, which is to have a conscience vote on this matter.
And, of course, your leader has stood up for the conscience vote, so if the binding vote people win, it's a bit of a slap in the face for him.
Well, that's all speculation on whether the proposition will be moved at the conference and what the outcome is. But, look, I think people come at this debate, certainly the debate in the 2011 conference was conducted this way, very respectfully. And I think, you know, reasonable people can disagree within the Labor Party about quite where the boundaries are on conscience versus binding votes. This has been, as you know, Michelle, an issue for well more than 100 years in the Labor Party, and it's often a matter of fine judgment.
What's going to be the factional makeup of this conference? Reports suggest that the right won't have control. Indeed, maybe that neither faction will have control.
Well, to be blunt about the sort of the internal entrails of how national conferences work, I think a couple of things seem increasingly clear, which is that the factional makeup will be much more evenly balanced
between right and left.
Between the right and the left than has been the case for a very considerable time, probably, you know, as long as anyone can remember, going back to
the right normally being into control.
The right normally being in the majority. I guess the position 20 to 30 years ago, when people like Mick Young and John Bannon were in the chair in the national president's position, was that the right was bigger than the left, but did not have the numbers in its own right and had to rely on alliance building with the centre-left, which is, you'll remember, the faction of Mick Young and Bill Hayden and Neil Blewett and people like that. So we haven't had a situation for a good couple of decades where the right hasn't had a pretty clear majority of national conference, and it's likely to be more evenly balanced this conference. But I think the other thing that's developed over the last, probably the last decade, or maybe even less than the last decade, is that those factional lines have been have become less rigid, and there is, I guess, more... there is more reaching across the factional aisle, if you like, on a whole range of policy areas. So I think that those factional numbers don't quite have the same meaning they might have had 10 to 20 years ago. I don't think you necessarily can assume that decisions will involve a very rigid lining up on one side of the factional divide or the other.
Are there many people in the middle, sort of independent?
Look, I don't know the final breakdown. There are some, but I don't know that number's increased much.
So really what you're saying is that issues will have to be negotiated on a sort of as they come basis, and it's going to be a bit more unpredictable, perhaps a lot more unpredictable than in the recent past.
Well, more organic perhaps is the word I would use. And look, I think that's a
nice word for sometimes chaos.
Sometimes that can be a good thing, I think. You know, I think factions have always played a useful organising role in a party as broad as the Labor Party. In a country that essentially has two major parties, it plays a useful organising role, and often also some of the really deep policy debates happen within factional caucuses and are honed down, if you like, into a sort of more, you know, a more digestible series of policy debates on conference floor. So, you know, I'm not saying the factional system is not without significant merit organisationally for the party, but there's the possibility that the edges are blurring a little bit.
You said when your victory in the presidency was announced that the party should start early on reform of its structure, that people in the rank and file wanted this, and yet there's a report that perhaps this is being pushed to one side. What do you expect to come out of the conference in the way of reform?
Well, I know that there is a very strong desire on the part of party members for National Conference to bite the bullet on this and to start to enact rule changes that deliver members more influence over important decisions. This has been a long-standing debate that really started in its modern form when Bob Hawke and Neville Rand did their report on the party after the 2001 Tampa election loss. And their first recommendation, number one recommendation in that report, was for National Conference delegates to be elected by the membership directly, not a hugely ambitious recommendation. Perhaps I moved that motion at the 2002 conference, seconded by Luke Foley, now the New South Wales opposition leader, and we got beaten. And we've been having that fight really for the last 15 years. Now, you know, since that time, there was a report from Bob Carr, John Faulkner and Steve Brax that made broadly the same recommendations. These are five giants of the Labor movement who know a thing or two about winning elections. And their view is to energise the party, to focus the membership on fighting and winning local campaigns, they need to be brought into the tent. They need to be given influence over important decisions. So at this conference, I hope that will take in things like Senate pre-selections, pre-selections for upper house positions at state level, so Legislative Council pre-selections. National Conference delegates is still an unresolved issue after 15 years. Bill Shorten has spoken positively about these things, and I think there's a greater appetite in the party now for those sorts of reforms than there were 15 years ago.
That'd only be a section of the conference elected by the rank and file. It wouldn't be the whole conference. The rest would continue to come up through the state branches.
Well, even when we debated this in 2002, there were about 803 different permutations about how you could do it being proposed. And I don't think, as the national president, it's my job to propose particular models.
But I think some element of rank and file election will come out of it?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that a substantial element of rank and file election will come out of this. I think members around the country, after the energy that they put into the leadership election in 2013 between Bill Shorten and Anthony Albanese and the very recent president's election, I think members will be deeply disappointed if, again, some factional leaders conspire to kick this down the road even further. It's been 15 years now. It's time to do this thing.
Well, this organic conference might be a very interesting one. Mark Butler, thank you very much. That's all from the Conversations Politics podcast for today. Thank you to my producer, Matt Dawson. I'm Michelle Grattan. We'll be back soon.